This is Stephen Thompson with Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm here with my friend and yours, Trey Graham.
Hey, buddy.
Because of Hurricane Sandy, we were unable to record a new episode this week.
We were home, mostly in our pajamas.
Entirely in our pajamas. Separately.
Not anywhere near a good microphone.
Separate homes.
Yes.
And I'm particularly crushed because I saw Cloud Atlas for nothing.
Which is what we were going to talk about.
That was what we were going to talk about. We will be picking up some of those topics next week on a brand new episode. But for now, we are giving you one of our favorite reruns.
Absolutely. You may recall a conversation about flea circuses once upon a time. That happens.
And I'm hoping that you don't recall it, and so that this is new to you.
Indeed. Also, a conversation about pop culture poserdom. Hope you enjoy it.
And that's the kicky music that means it's time once again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table with the Pop Culture Happy Hour staff. Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the movies editor at NPR.org.
And Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am an editor and writer with NPR Music and the creator of America's most successful new holiday.
Go ahead.
The most rapidly growing holiday of them all.
Go ahead.
It went from zero to observed
slightly
by several
more than zero. Yeah.
In a span of only 1 week.
Why don't you explain a little bit more about this project for people who may not have heard us last
week? What was the holiday called, Stephen Thompson?
Well, as you would know if you listen to this show religiously, people, is that just last week we started a new holiday called Appreciation Day. And it was really Glenn's idea mostly.
Yeah.
Glenn said, how do we properly
publicly talk about our feelings?
Express our feelings.
That's very me.
It's, it's
me all over.
That's right. So Glenn was like, you know, the Hallmark store nearby has, you know, recently closed, and, you know, ordinarily I would like to buy everyone I know a card, but if there's some way that I can express sentiment to others. Anyway, now we decided to observe the 1 year anniversary of our little podcast by encouraging others to take to social media in order to express the nicest thing that they can truthfully say about the people around them. Not backhandedly, not snottily, not, you know, I like your socks. And what ended up happening was that all day Saturday, July 16th, which was Appreciation Day, if you followed the little Appreciation Day hashtag on Twitter, you were just flooded with incredibly warm things. And for me, the best thing about it was reading what people I'd never heard of said to other people I'd never heard of. But it was incredibly lovely, and it seemed to be warmly received by the people who participated in it. And it was kind of nice, like, 4 days later, you could tell that, like, some people check their Twitter feed, like every few days, and they would see, like, why did... Like Robin Hilton from All Songs Considered, who tweeted back, are you drunk?
Yeah. <That's
nice>. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, he would have said that on Appreciation Day, too.
It turned out he actually knew what was going on.
No, it was warm. And it was wonderful, and if I was emotionally equipped to participate, which I am not, I would have joined you, but I did get to bask in the reflected glow of all the goodwill.
You got to have nice things said about you.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. But as I was explaining to Linda last night, I will not be passive-aggressively cyberbullied into being a nice person.
And everybody understood. Yeah. I think it was your own way of participating in Appreciation Day. It was just to remain the guy you are.
There you are.
Which means not participating in appreciation. Just be yourself.
See, that to is me all over.
To occasionally throw a pun out into the universe.
Exactly.
But as otherwise, one
does. Just being yourself is all we could possibly ask for. All right. So there's Appreciation Day, which is when everybody speaks with ultimate sincerity. So we thought we would do a 180 and speak about a complete lack of sincerity next. We're going to talk about being a poser. And what got us on this topic, Glenn, well, then why don't you explain the article that got us on this topic?
Sure. On July 13th, Frank Bruni wrote an article for The New York Times called Harry, I Hardly Knew Ye, in which he basically talked about what it's like to be outside of a massive cultural phenomenon, like in this case, the Harry Potter books. He eventually got to the point of saying that there's several different ways to deal with that. You can either acquiesce and just, you know, bow under, or you can fight it loudly, or you can try to negotiate some kind of deal with this massive cultural phenomenon? Or in his case, what he started to do with things like The Sopranos and in some cases Harry Potter was to be a poser, to pretend knowledge. Before I get to that, I do want to talk a little bit about the nature of this particular piece. You guys all read it, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't, but I'm going to pretend I did.
That's nicely done. Nicely done.
No, I really didn't, but go ahead.
All right, well, let me explain to you what he's up to. He leads with a clunker, which is not in and of itself a crime. If that was a crime, everybody in this room would be in jail. But he starts with this. For a while, I have wondered if some swine flu had wrought epidermal havoc in barnyards near and far. Why all the chatter about Hogwarts?
Wow.
I have to say, it's a weaker line when you read it out loud.
Oof.
But it is a weak line.
Oof is what I have to say. But here's the nut graph. He kind of puts himself out there as somebody who didn't participate in the Potter thing at all. And talking about the end of the era with the movie coming out. It's a big moment for non-believers like me. With the Potter juggernaut finally grinding to a halt, we're no longer left with the odd sensation, by turns isolating and liberating, stippled with doubt and suffused with defiance, of standing conspicuously apart from a cultural phenomenon that so many embrace. It's the twilight of that particular tyranny. Now, we'll come back to the use of the word tyranny.
I hope you never read aloud anything I write ever in my life.
One gets the sense, reading the rest of this piece, that the thing that Bruni likes best about standing conspicuously apart from a cultural phenomenon is the conspicuous
standpoint.
Yes. What I object to about this is not just that he's doing the thing, a tone, by the way, we've all experienced in this room, of somebody saying, well, that's the uncouth, unwashed hoi polloi embracing their bread and circuses.
The hoi polloi.
Yeah.
But what he's actually doing is taking it a step further and saying, not only is that happening, but I see it as a personal attack, a personal affront to me. And that is just taking it way too far. Now, I just wanted to see what you guys had to say about this piece.
Okay, I think you're pummeling him a little hard on the use of tyranny, where I think he's being deliberately playful.
Mm.
Now, I don't know that playful and spittled or whatever the other words.
Stippled.
I do think, right. There's a paragraph in this thing where he says, my friend T is not a Stieg Larsson person and insists that even a few months ago, he still believed the girl with the dragon tattoo was a neo-punk band, but I'm reasonably sure he's just showing off. Come on. I mean, he's turning that equation on its head there. He's saying, I realize that in writing this, there is a certain poser-ness involved. If you're going to claim that your friend couldn't possibly not know about Lisbeth, then you can't ever claim to have been confused about what a Hogwart is.
Yeah, you think so?
I do.
Hmm. I do empathize with him on this one point. Okay, you have this massive cultural thing, and you feel on the outside of it, and one reaction to that is to take pride in that. Now, certainly I...
Those are the I don't own television people.
But I would argue that something like Harry Potter is a big part of American life. A thing like sports is bred into the warp and woof of American life in a bigger way. And you don't see me whining. You kind of do sometimes. You don't see me whining that what I can do at any moment is opt out of it. Now, if I can opt out simply, easily, out of something like sports, this guy can opt out of something like Harry Potter and not have to write an entire piece whining about it.
So to drag us back to where we were originally going, not to interrupt the pile-on of this poor writer, but we were originally going to talk about the claiming to know about that which you do not actually know. Now, Stephen, you seem like a poser. Why don't you kick it off for us?
First of all, I don't think this piece is as egregious as Glenn makes it out to be. I think there is a certain amount of, I would like to show how sort of above it all I am. I think there are little traces of that, but I also think there are kernels scattered throughout this article, and we'll throw a link to the story on the blog for people to debate for themselves. But I do think there are a lot of pop culture phenomena with which we're asked to engage. In the stairwell on the way down here to the studio, Mike Katziff, our esteemed producer, and I were talking about how many big, like, landmark pop cultural events have taken place with, like, brand new things that we're supposed to have engaged with already. He's like, hey, have you tried Spotify? Well, how about Turntable FM? What? You're not on Google Plus? And it is possible to have gone on a long overseas vacation
and missed the rise of at least two of those.
Things that are supposed to be sea changes. Glenn is giving me a skeptical face, but they're supposed to be sea changes sort of in the way we consume music. Oh, what, Mr. Thompson, are you on the cloud yet? You know, and so it's very easy, I think, and what I thought was sort of interesting about the article was he's trying to get at the bottom of what are the ways that different people process the absolute inevitability of missing out on some of these things. So as I was starting to scribble down, where have I been a poser? Where have I pretended? It was like scribble, just like, it was so easy to just write, I've never seen Avatar. I've never read any of the Twilight books. I've only seen long, boring, wordless stretches of various Twilight movies.
But do you pretend to these things?
But there is
when
a certain
at a cocktail party.
Well, here's, I think, one of the fundamental flaws of the Frank Bruni piece is, it's really no skin off his ass. And you kind of made this same point. Like, who cares? Who's asking you? Who's like, let me quiz you about Harry Potter. What, you don't know what a muggle is?
Right.
I mean, who really goes through that?
On the other hand, woe to the critic who tries to review one of those films as a film without knowing...
Without being fully engaged
without
in
being
the series.
Fully steeped in the world.
Oh, I think there's a difference...
That's inside baseball. That's a media problem.
I think there's a difference between being fully steeped and fully engaged. You're meeting the work on its own terms. You're meeting the work where it is. Not,
sure.
You don't have to memorize what a cockatrice is.
I will tell you that if you don't know the difference between basilisk and whatever the hell that snake is,
you will get called out.
Jeez.
You will get called out on it on your review for NPR.
You should.
Yeah. The example that I would bring up sort of most profoundly, and it's movies I've seen, but movies that I'm not steeped in, are the Star Wars movies.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly remembering the point when Star Wars Episode One came out, and I, at the time, was working for an organization where people... Like, the week leading up to Star Wars Episode One coming out... We barely were able to put out an issue of the paper because, like, half the staff was already waiting in line for several days, like, and while wearing cloaks in the days.
As you do.
As one does, leading up to the release of Star Wars Episode One. And it was just absolutely everywhere. And it was like, oh, is this... You know, and the thing is, I'm so not conversant in Star Wars lore, even though when I was a kid, I saw the movies, I had some of the action figures. I mean, I know it's a massively important pop cultural event, but it has not made its way into my vocabulary. And so many, many, many conversations with many, many, many Star Wars nerds over time have been very difficult and have sort of been situations where I've found myself treading water and sort of pretending to be more conversant in the movies than I really am. And with Star Wars Episode One, I didn't see it until it was in the budget theaters 6 months later, at which point I could not believe how terrible it was.
Right. See, to me, poser has to do with a sort of grandiosity. You're pretending to something high class, elitist, for lack of a better term. And I don't think Star Wars really fits the bill in terms of poserdom.
I think as long as you're pretending to
knowledge you don't have.
To anything that causes you to be accepted by a group of people whom you're trying to be accepted. It can be anything.
Yeah. The number of laughing along with very, very sketchy references to obscure Star Wars characters of whom I have not heard.
Right.
Okay.
I have certainly been guilty of that many,
poser.
Many times over.
That's poser.
And I've certainly pretended to be, more of that particular brand of nerd. I have pretended to be more of that than I am.
Very, very good. Trey Graham.
Well, I have certainly been known to be among a whole different kind of crowd and pretending to perhaps more detailed knowledge of things like pre-Raphaelite art.
Oh, I'm the same way.
Whole swaths of modern classical music. The films of Rainer Werner Fassbinder.
German art song? Oh, wait.
Yeah. No, that one I'm pretty good on. Maybe now is the time for me to confess that I have never seen a single episode of The Wire.
Mm. Oh.
You're the one.
You know, I'm gonna join you on that one.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen scenes from The Wire and thought, wow, this looks tremendous. I should totally watch the entire series, and then not done so. So I'm in the same boat on The Wire.
But have you ever been in a conversation, Trey, where you're kind of going, oh yeah, Stringer Bell? I mean, no, not really.
No.
I've done a certain amount of. I've done more pretending to have seen, like, not contradicted when somebody has assumed that I have seen The Wire.
Ah, see, that's more of the gray area.
That's more to
more
try
that.
To be spared.
That is the gray
that's
area.
Attempting to be spared a lecture, though.
That's just politeness. That's just politeness.
You think so?
It's up to a point, yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? Stop every conversation in the middle and say, I actually don't know what you're talking about, so, you know, don't assume I do.
I've met people who do that.
Well, and see, mine...
And do you enjoy spending time with them?
I do not.
Yeah. Mine is going to shock and appall Stephen in particular.
Really?
Because although it is no longer the case, it was originally football. Because I have always been friends with lots of guys who really like it if you know something about football. I happen to be friends with a bunch of guys who were football fans, and before I developed an authentic interest in it, I definitely pretended to have one. Sports is one where, for sure, you do a lot of fakery and puffery in terms of like, oh yeah, totally, that guy, and you have no idea who they're talking about. Happens all the time.
Do you know who Brett Favre is?
I do. Mm. I do.
Okay, good.
I do. I could pick him out of a lineup. Glenn Weldon, poserdom.
Well, first, how to spot him. Because okay. I was a winery tour guide for several years.
Oh.
And this is what I'm talking about.
Wow.
This is where poserdom goes to die.
For real. Or it goes to live.
So it's very easy. And
vibrantly.
You're trained a little bit to figure out, what the wines you're offering are like. So they would give us courses, and so I learned some stuff.
Jeez.
You can,
I had no
things
idea.
Things I didn't know about you.
Yeah. Yeah. You can see when somebody comes up to you, whether they belong in one of three camps. The first one is they love this stuff, and they just want to know more. Just tell me more. Mm-hmm. The other are those who so embrace the arcana behind wine and the names that they're doing it to justify their raging alcoholism. The third are the I want to be a super special smarty pants who mm-hmm. just right. want to show off. And so you can tell they hold themselves in a different way. What they're doing, the poses, are looking around at what other people are saying all the time. They are judging themselves. Now, for my own poserdom, this is a big confession, and if any of my friends and family are listening, they will see a big part of me, a big key. So, Linda, ask me if I've read a book that's like old. Ask me if I've read All the Pretty Horses.
Have you read All the Pretty Horses, Glenn?
Long time ago.
Oh, I have done
wanna
that.
I have
mine?
So done that.
You want to hear mine?
Yeah.
Okay, ask me if I have seen some classic film.
Have you seen Last Year at Marienbad?
Not all the way through.
See, this is what I wanted to get to. This is what I'm talking about. Now, in my defense, which is not much of a defense.
I mean, technically, mine is not a lie.
See? Okay.
Oh, that's true. You have not seen it all the way through.
Linda Holmes, ever the Quaker.
There are so many people right now who are like, ever oh my God, she said that to me once.
That's right.
She says that to me all the time. And now I'm killing it. And I'm killing it. Yeah. I can't ever say it again.
No, I've completely done the sort
now
of
I'm going to have to say, I watched it backwards, I think.
But that's it. I mean, like, in my defense, you know.
My memory of it is sketchy. I do that one.
Oh, that's also good. But it's true. I remember as much from books that I have read as I sort of know about books that I never read.
Yep, that's right.
So once we get past the two-year horizon, all bets are off. Maybe I read it, maybe I didn't. I can't tell.
And but it's all about the same.
Yeah, it's all. You think about it. You get a little pause.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Not all the way through. Yeah.
Real quick, there's a mirror image to this, to poserdom, which is this phenomenon of imposter syndrome. You guys know what imposter syndrome is.
Yeah.
This is the feeling that you know stuff, you actually know your stuff, but you are constantly living in fear that someone will jump out of a bush and shout, Jacques Hughes, you know nothing. I happen to think that in any creative endeavor, and just in life, imposter syndrome is an excellent thing to have.
Yes.
Like me, if you don't have character or a work ethic, fear is a good thing to have in its place.
It will generally drive you to do a little research.
Keeps you honest.
Yeah, keep you honest most of the time.
It keeps you doing the work and it keeps you on your toes. Yeah. So I'm all for imposter syndrome.
So if all of you would like to come to the blog, to Monkey See, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH, we would love to hear about your poser moments.
Or, if you've discovered a tell in my particular personality.
Exactly.
How do you, I haven't described.
What's your tell?
How do you cloak your poserdom?
What's your tell when you're faking it? And we'll be happy to hear, and we will understand, as you can tell. So we've reached the midpoint of the show, and that means it's time for me to present all of you with a game.
Is it a quiz?
I have a little quiz for you.
Yay.
I have a little game for you. This is a TV episode title quiz.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to make three quick trips around.
Okay.
Glenn Weldon, which is a real episode of the show I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant? Baby in a Shoe or Baby in a Shopping Cart?
Which is real, Baby in a Shoe.
Baby in a Shoe is real. Right. Very good.
No way.
Trey Graham.
Wait, one just plopped out?
It's a big shoe.
I don't know.
It's a really big shoe.
Baby in a Shoe.
There was an old woman.
Trey Graham, which is a real episode of the show I Almost Got Away With It? Got to Hide in a Morgue or Got to Escape in Underwear?
Got to Escape in Underwear.
That is correct. Stephen Thompson, which is a real episode of the recent show 101 Ways to Leave a Game Show? Is it Indiana Jeff and the Temple of Boom Or is it Car Wars, The Empire Strikes Jack?
Boy, it could really be both of those.
Indiana Jeff and the Temple of Boom, Car Wars, The Empire Strikes Jack.
I'm going to go with Temple of Boom.
That is correct!
Yes! Right.
Glenwell.
Wow.
Glenwell,
this
is a little different.
Feat of coin flipping.
Yes. Which of the following is not an Animal Planet special? Drug kingpin hippos, hillbilly hand fishing, or mutant spider hotel?
Boy. Hillbilly hand fishing is obviously, that's actually real.
It's totally real.
Totally real. I'm going to go, I want it to be the hippos.
That is a real Animal Planet special.
Wow.
So it was Mutant Spider Hotel was the one that I made up my own
self.
It's
a good one. It's a good one.
Trey Graham, which is a real episode of Bizarre ER? One, a pencil in the lung.
God.
Two, $6 in pennies.
I like that.
Oh, wow. Even if I'm wrong, I'm going to say $6 in pennies because one day I want my husband to come on this podcast and tell the story of how he ate 3 euros.
The real episode is a pencil in the lung.
Awesome.
And not $6 in pennies.
All right.
I would like a little props for making up $6.
That's pretty good.
Which is a real episode of My Strange Addiction?
Oh, nice.
Eats dryer sheets / shower drain hair collector.
Oh, you don't need the slash.
Or eats roaches / can't stop quacking.
They're two different people, right?
Yeah, each episode has two people.
Eats roaches.
Eats dryer sheets / shower drain hair collector. Or eats roaches / can't stop quacking.
You know what the terrifying thing is? Is that one of these came out of Linda's mind. That's what's bothering me. And that is the game here.
Sir, you are filibustering.
It is which one did Linda make up? I'm going to guess dryer sheets / shower drain hair.
Is real.
Yeah. Yes.
That is correct.
Yeah, of course.
Which is a real episode of The Real Housewives of New Jersey?
Oh, dear.
Sealed with a Diss or The Hair Up There?
I'm going to say Sealed with a Diss.
That is correct. Trey Graham, is First Date Nightmare an episode of I Shouldn't Be Alive or Jerseylicious?
I Shouldn't Be Alive.
That is correct. And finally, is Rusted and Busted an episode of Toddlers and Tiaras or American Restoration?
I'm going to go with American Restoration.
That is great.
Did I get them all?
Thompson won it. Yeah,
Thompson won.
Yeah.
I do watch
this
a lot of
this is the most fun game ever. Just knowing that there was a show that devoted half of its television running time to someone who collects hair from the shower drain.
Yep.
And eats
it's
it.
My
just,
strange addiction. Yep.
Wow.
I do kind of want.
Was it an eating addiction?
No.
Or,
they
just collected.
One was eats dryer sheets.
Right.
The other person was
just
shower
like,
drain
hair.
I had heard it as eating the hair.
Two different people.
That's much better.
But that's a whole different mania.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eating the hair would be different.
There's a name for that. Anybody know what it is?
No,
it's
I really don't.
It's trichotillomania. I can't believe I know that.
Anyway,
I kind of believe you know that.
I can't either.
Poser.
So that was this week's Game TV episode title trivia. And
I want there to be an episode called Can't Stop Quacking.
Yeah.
I really do.
I need the end apostrophe.
Really
though.
Do.
I think Bizarre ER was the one I was most proud to find. Anyway, now we are on to our next segment. You know, we had a recent discussion with Mel Kramer, who works on Fresh Air. And one of the things that she brought up when we were chatting about topics was America's Got Talent. And the fact that America's Got Talent, unlike all these other singing shows, America's Got Talent,
which is coming back now.
Which is back now. Brings you a bunch of people who have other obscure talents other than singing, for which there may be no market that we know of. But there they are anyway.
There are a bunch of them that have a surprisingly large market. I mentioned on a podcast a week or two ago about the gay country line dancing thing.
Yes.
There is a dance troupe, a sort of performing Broadway style / country music cowboy hoedown group based here in D.C. called the D.C. Cowboys, which actually made it several rounds into that show.
There are certainly dance groups that have more of a market, I think, than some of the other people.
And I was going to say that the point of that observation being that they actually kind of make a living performing at events around here.
But your plate spinners, your fire eaters, your guy who juggles tasers. these people don't necessarily have a home. So what we were thinking about...
like, literally.
Right? We're talking about how these talents have been revived through some combination of... or could be revived through some combination of variety shows and YouTube and reality shows. And just the right marketing push could bring some of these old-timey talents back to the forefront. So, Glenn, give me a talent that could make a comeback with the right combination of marketing and exposure and viral hoo-ha.
Well, speaking of viral hoo-ha, did you guys happen to see the four acrobats who performed for the Pope?
No.
You have not seen this video?
No.
By Trey Graham.
No, I have not seen the video.
I'm about to make your day.
All right.
It's these four strapping Italian acrobats. It's like a little Christmas celebration for the Pope. They step up to the throne where the Pope is. They strip to the waist, which is, for the record, my favorite phrase in the English language. They strip to the waist. And they proceed to do all manner of acrobatic feats. When you see this video, it cuts between the shirtless muscular acrobats and the Pope. And that is just, you have some very impure thoughts, and then you see the Holy Father. You react to the Holy Father, and it cuts back to these four. So they're the Pellegrini brothers. Look them up. But man, not them, though. I'm talking about you mentioned it already, plate spinning. Plate spinning. If you need a better metaphor for our crazy, mixed up, fast paced modern world in which we live, what better than plate spinning? And also, it's a nice chance to hear a saber dance. Remember? Saber dance?
Yep. I think any genre of performance that absolutely requires madcap music
exactly
is key.
So we'd have America's Next Top Plate Spinner. The show would move around. It'd be in Delft, you know, where, and then get some plates. And then it moved to China, where they'd get some china, and they'd go to the Venice glassworks, you know, and they'd get some glass. But I think that would be a lot of fun. And also, you know who actually, I think, first paired plate spinning with saber dance was the Ed Sullivan Show. I think, I'm pretty sure that's where it comes from. What we're talking about a lot is the variety show, and Ed Sullivan was kind of the last great one, because in the 70s, all of the animal acts and acrobatics and juggling and ventriloquism kind of got away from the variety show, and it became music and sketch comedy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Your Donnie and Marie's, your Captain and Tennille's.
Your Brady Bunch Variety
Your
Hour.
Brady Bunch Hour, which is the most awesome ever.
Your Dolly Parton Show.
I want to throw something out there. I think also in the 70s, one thing happened to a lot of these variety show acts, and that thing is the Gong Show.
Oh, that's a good point.
Where I think a lot of that stuff became identified more as cheesy and stupid.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like an incredible plate spinner might just be like, oh, that's a guy spinning plates. You know, equated with the guy playing the nose flute.
Mm-hmm.
Or the guy who can like fart the alphabet or whatever. And that's actually like a perfect
flute players and alphabet farmers,
yeah.
Please.
Which
don't
is
be
a which is a perfect segue to my I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I think the Gong Show, obviously then cable, of course, wiping out a lot of these variety shows is, you know, a big thing that took away our acrobats and our
plate spinners, and we're going to get them back. Mm-hmm. Well said, Glenn Weldon. Trey Graham.
Well, you guys will remember the internet phenomenon crying while eating.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
In a similar vein, are you familiar with Varla Jean Merman?
Yes, she was on Project Runway.
Yes, that's right. Varla Jean Merman is a character developed by the actor and singer Jeffrey Roberson. Varla Jean is supposedly the love child of Ethel Merman and Ernest Borgnine, right?
And I should say, if you remember the drag queen episode of Project Runway, she was the one who wore the tight pink bodysuit with the strategically placed buckle. It was one of the best outfits on the drag queen episode of Project Runway,
yes.
If you recall. Go ahead.
So Varla Jean, in addition to appearing occasionally on Project Runway and other reality shows, she does cabaret and short films, and back in 2003, she was one of the stars of a feature film called Girls Will Be Girls. And in this movie, she demonstrated her very particular talent, which is singing full voice relatively well, because Roberson is a trained falsettist and really quite a fine singer, singing full-voiced through a vocalese while consuming an entire can of Cheese Whiz.
Yeah. So
I hear nothing but silence.
Mike did not actually cut the microphones for that. That was actually that was genuine silence.
We were just processing. Speaking of cheese whiz, I was just processing.
You can see a clip from this movie with this scene happening on various websites. I heartily encourage you to do so. So the wacky minor talent that I would like to see celebrated and elevated is performing while eating.
Uh-huh.
Performing while eating.
Yes. That seems like it'd be dangerous.
You would think.
Outstanding.
High wire. Did you say vocalese?
Yes.
What's a vocalese?
A song without words that's meant to sort of show off your range and technique.
I see.
By the way, Saber Dance by Catchetarian.
I know.
Let the
I had that written down.
Nobody
I didn't want to show off.
You know,
I wanted to be a poser.
I was going to say. I mean, I knew that. I mean, I remember, like, a long, long time ago, I kind of knew that.
I don't think I've ever heard it all the way through.
There you go.
Stephen Thompson, minor talent.
What has become?
No offense.
Linda?
It's your title.
Linda, what has become of the humble flea circus?
What has become
that
of the humble?
That is a good question.
Was the flea circus ever a thing?
Yes, it was a
thing. On Bugs Bunny.
I had originally, my original thought was, what has become of the humble flea circus? And then I'm like, was that ever an actual thing, or did it exist entirely in Warner Brothers cartoons when I was a kid? And so I did a little poking around. I found a website called Wikipedia, which has all sorts of useful and reliable information.
As you discover reading taxes, just amazing things are happening.
You know, among the things I learned is that, for example, they don't train the fleas, but they'll attach like a thin thread to the flea and that it has on it for its entire life.
That is a lie.
They don't
it's a little flea leash.
That is a
flea
lie.
Leash, they don't like flea circuses. Real flea circuses. Big attraction. Maybe the wrong way of putting it. But like in the latter half of the 1800s, early part of the 1900s. But there are, at least according to Wikipedia, there's a list of the working flea circuses that are currently in operation. For example, Professor A.G. Gertsakov's Acme Miniature Flea Circus performs...
Miniature flea circus. As opposed to a
full-size. as opposed to the jumbos. Yeah, performs primarily in the United States and Canada, touring numerous venues and festivals since 1995.
I have always assumed that a flea circus did not involve any actual fleas. The joke was that it was,
the
flea circus.
Here's a tiny little miniature. Yeah.
You can't see them, but they're doing acrobatics right
apparently
now.
Apparently using... various sort of magnifiers, which I would imagine you couldn't
position. This whole thing you're making it all up.
I would imagine that with the giant magnifying glass, you could not position it directly under the sun.
You are making this entire thing up.
Or it would be a dust
circus. This is a bunch of baloney.
Anyway, bring back the flea circus. The fact that there are still some touring flea circuses makes me incredibly happy. The other thing I wanted to point out is that as much as some of these things are being brought back by America's Got Talent, who ends up winning America's Got Talent?
Singers.
Sure.
Yeah, that's right. Singers. Okay. Well, here's mine. The humble ventriloquist needs to be rescued from Jeff Dunham.
Yes.
Who is the only sort of current popular working ventriloquist that I'm aware of.
What about Willie Tyler and Lester?
And who I personally think is kind of odious in addition to unfunny. If you've never seen him, he had a short-lived show on Comedy Central. He's also on YouTube a lot. But he is one of our only popular highly paid ventriloquist.
Now, he is a very highly paid
right,
ventriloquist.
Right, exactly.
He's a massively successful.
Absolutely. Now, I feel, personally, that ventriloquism deserves better than this. Because throughout history, not only does ventriloquism in American culture have a long and, I'm going to say, dignified history, sort of. You need the puppet because the puppets become figures to whom you can refer. Because if you have ever tried to explain a lady on The Bachelorette and then you figure out that she looks like Madam...
Oh, she does. I know exactly who you're talking about.
You get to that point where it's like, you need Madam. You need puppets. They are wonderful to compare things to. Bring back puppets. Now, we've talked recently about Muppets and Elmo and all that stuff. So we're perfectly okay with puppets. We're perfectly okay with puppets in settings like Avenue Q and other stuff. And I personally just want to see good old ventriloquism brought back. The dummy on the knee. If nothing else, it's unbelievably creepy. As you know, if you've ever watched any episodes of Twilight Zone, there, mm-hmm. I believe, are more than one Twilight Zone about ventriloquists because dummies are creepy.
Dummies are creepy.
And so I just think ventriloquism, bring it back.
I think that's going to be a tall order because, you know, as we all know, there was that great East Coast versus West Coast ventriloquism war.
Beef.
And, you know, it went so bad.
Now, for those who haven't seen it, because this just swept the office again,
yeah.
Trey is referring to a Mr. Show sketch,
yes.
a link to which we have to put on the blog, but, mm-hmm. which is the funniest damn thing mm-hmm. ever.
Two sidebars. That was a total poser moment because I had not seen that Mr. Show
Nicely
sketch
done.
Until the YouTube video went around this week. And number two, I'm pretty sure Glenn Weldon was thinking the same thing I am thinking. We know the lady who was the model for Madam.
You do?
Totally. She lived a block from Glenn's house. Until fairly recently.
That is incredibly
and
impressive.
And was a cashier at the restaurant a block from your house.
Hmm.
Well,
no
she
idea.
Went
the
on to...
The hair and the purple eyeshadow
I thought it was
and everything.
Supposed to be Ethel Merman.
No.
She went on to strongly resemble a lady on The Bachelorette. I'm just saying. So mine is ventriloquism.
Somewhere, Willie Tyler is throwing Lester in disgust.
Yeah, that's what about Bob and Jay, though? Remember Bob and Jay from Soap?
Mm.
Anyone? Jane Bob?
I believe Willie Tyler and Lester are still working. They're no Jeff Dunham fame-wise. I agree that there needs to be funnier ventriloquists than Jeff Dunham.
So that brings us to the final part of our show, which is what is making us happy this week. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
Two snack-related things making me happy. but I am not Trey Graham. I'm not talking about actual snacks that you would find in the CVS in aisle 3.
Right.
I am
next
talking,
to the wet wipes.
Next to the wet wipes and the tonic water. I am talking about meta-snacksual commentary in the form of, one, a Tumblr blog called Revolt Snacks of America,
yes.
A Field Guide, which is by Sarah Bunting, a name you will have heard mentioned on this podcast
yeah.
before. This time you can be assured that it is not cronyism because I do not know Sarah Bunting. I've never met Sarah Bunting. I'm a fan of her work, and this, I just want to point out to you all, is brilliant, funny writing. It's just exactly what it sounds like, a field guide to revolting snacks. Where to start? My money is on the Circus Peanut entry, but also you might want to go with Turkish Delight. Linda, do you have a thought?
The Turkish Delight was the one that cracked me up enough that I had to explain to my pod mates in the office what I was reading because I got to this part where she talks about how it has different notes that emerge as you're eating the Turkish Delight, and one of them is hairspray.
Yep.
And it just made me crack up. It made me giggle.
The other one is called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. The Mike involved is Michael Ian Black, actor, comedian, and the man responsible for the most emotionally satisfying episode of Celebrity Poker Showdown in the long and storied history of ever. It was wonderful. The Tom in question is Tom Cavanaugh, TV's Ed. And the podcast is simplicity itself. Number one, they buy a snack. Number two, they discuss the snack in some detail. Now, if you are not prepared for lengthy disquisitions on the nature and characteristics of various familiar household snacks, this is not the podcast for you. Point three, they eat the snack. Now, I hear a lot of you out there going, I'm out. Because
right.
That's gross.
The sound of eating.
I do not like listening to people.
I'm with you.
Unless
and I myself have quit podcasts when the hosts start eating on mic. 2 points to that. On those podcasts, the snacks come out of nowhere. The food comes out of nowhere and they just start eating. And it's like, I did not sign on for this.
Yeah.
The name of this show is Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. So there's an element of, Shayna, they bought their tickets. They
yes.
knew what they were getting in for.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The other thing is they have the basic human decency to close their mouths and step away from the mic.
Thank you.
So there's that. And finally, they rate the snacks. Now, just that enough is not really... I mean, you might listen to one or two, but there is an X factor here. There is a Z axis to the show that makes me want to go back and listen to it again. And you will hear it now, I hope, in this clip.
If I have a friend, okay, and my friend, he likes to say, you know, how'd it go? Nailed it. It doesn't matter what it is. He nailed it, right?
Whatever it was.
Nailed it.
Right.
Ask me how it went.
How'd it go?
Nailed it. Right? And I would love it if one time you would walk in the room and be like, I'd be like, how'd hosting the Gotham Awards go?
Nailed it.
I would be like, yeah, boy!
Woo.
Yeah, because that's, you know, how I react.
I hope you wouldn't be like that.
I don't think I would be, yeah, boy. I don't think I would be like, yeah, boy. I'd probably be like, that's awesome. Great. You know me. I'd be like, that's great, Michael. I'm happy for you. Why wasn't I invited?
Right. I hear the condescension in your voice. That's great, Michael. I'm happy for you.
See, that's exactly what I'm talking about, because there was no condescension in that. We can play it back. I'd be like, that's great, Michael. I'm happy for you. See?
It sounded like you were treating me like a second grader.
Michael.
Look at you. You wrote your B's.
I'm not doing that. Who's a good comedian?
They love each other, these guys. That's the magic factor here that really makes it worth it. They have great chemistry with each other, so it's really worth checking out. Where to start? I would say the microwave popcorn episode.
Very good.
Mike and Tom Eat Snacks.
Very good. And Glenn Weldon said it himself, people, the magic ingredient is love. Mm. Trey Graham.
Does the name Louis Vertel mean anything to you?
Louis Fritel.
No. Louis Fritel. He writes for Movie
Line.
You
know, I feel like I've heard of that name.
That's another
been a while.
One of, that's another one of my
posters. It's
been
a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Where have I heard that name before?
He writes for Movie Line. He appears to be about 17, 19 maybe. And he's experimenting with a YouTube show, which he calls, and I'm sorry for this, Verbal Voguing. I have to say I'm a little more amused by the title of his first episode, which is Immaculate Conniption. I should warn anyone who plans to listen to this thing right up front that he is filthy, just downright filthy. He's like the love child of a drag queen and the frat boy who just sassed her. He will strike a lot of folks as sort of, ooh, look at me, I'm naughty. And I don't think he has quite a handle yet on the discipline part of comedy.
Right.
On this pilot episode, for instance, he starts off with a political riff that's both weak and a little dated. He's angry about Target and what some have described as its corporate support of anti-gay politicians. But he gets in a couple of decent ones at Target's expense. He's basically saying, how can Target be anti-gay? And he's like, come on, Isaac Mizrahi has a collection there. He's a lisp with feet. And then there's this one.
You're headquartered in Minnesota. That's where Prince is from. Okay, he looks like Bambi, who is gay. I like thinking about Target this much. It's really therapeutic for me.
So, you know, Minnesota, Prince, Bambi, gay. I kind of like that string of associations, right? Second segment features some not bad riffing on Kesha. There is a solid crack based on the song where she claims to brush her teeth with Jack Daniels. Solid, although arguably a little misogynist, as some really super gay humor can occasionally seem. But then the third segment is called Hashtag Throwdown, which is basically him doing a dramatic reading of selections from a Twitter-style meme. It would be better if he had sort of managed to film himself doing it competition style with maybe a co-host and without any obvious edits. But still, it's kind of fun, although I may be biased by this first edition subject, which was hashtag naughty play titles. The only two I can safely repeat on this podcast are Lady Windermere's Fanny and Hoboat. bottom line, he's a wee tiny baby gay with what strikes me as a substantial raw talent. And if he were on the A-list instead of the appalling creatures who were apparently the best logo could afford, I might actually watch season two.
There you go.
Louis Fritel. You can follow him on Twitter at Louis Fritel.
Very good. Thank you, Trey Graham. Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
I have nothing as concrete as my colleagues. I know we talked about this at the beginning of the show, but really, honest to goodness, what is making me happy this week was the sort of outpouring of kindness and sort of sharing and sweetness and, you know, sort of Weldonian emotions that accompanied Appreciation Day. And, of course, the first anniversary of the show. And one thing that I would throw out there, I don't mean for this to be just a blatant plug, but I would very, very highly recommend anybody who listens to this show, please, 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 go to our Facebook page and participate in those discussions, because I get each one of the comments and wall posts and everything. I don't know if you guys do this too. Each one of those comments and wall posts gets emailed to me. And I just find it is just having in my inbox this endless supply of nice, smart, funny, interesting people recommending things is just an absolute ongoing pleasure in my life. The more people go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/PCHH, click like, join the group, and participate. Because I spent like 14 hours on Twitter on Saturday doing nothing but composing, I think you're really a decent person. That's really fresh in my mind as something that I've sort of spent a lot of time doing in the last week.
Are you drunk?
Very good, Stephen Thompson. What is making me happy this week? Well, you have been spending a lot of time loving others, whatever.
Can we just all agree that the time for that is past?
Yeah, exactly.
Appreciation Day is so July 16th.
Not Appreciation Month. While you have been enjoying other people, I have been watching old episodes of Parks and Recreation, which I like to refresh my memory as to the shows I really enjoy as the summer wears on and I miss them more and more. And, of course, watching a lot of Parks and Recreation means appreciating Nick Offerman, who plays Ron Swanson, maybe the best comedy character on television he calls himself Ron Effing Swanson. Now, one of the things that you know about Ron Swanson, if you watch Parks and Recreation, is that Ron loves his meat products. He loves a big turkey leg. He loves bacon. He loves breakfast foods served by pretty brunette women, but that's a little bit different. When he eats a big turkey leg wrapped in bacon, they actually call it a Swanson. So there was a photo that went around Twitter today that someone took at a Trader Joe's, where some incredibly enterprising Trader Joe's person had made up this adorable sign with a caricature, a little cartoon drawing of Ron Swanson with his distinctive mustache. And it said, Ron's Special. And that's where they're selling the bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of those things where you look at it, and what I love about it, it's not just that it salutes this thing that I enjoy so much, but it's that you just imagine that little Trader Joe's employee who gets the idea. Like, when you talked, Glenn, about being funny shelf tag guy, this to me is like funny grocery shelf guy. Like, all of a sudden this person gets it like, oh, I love Ron Swanson. He loves bacon. Let's make a Ron Swanson selling bacon sign. And it's just one of those goofy things where before the age of Twitter, nobody would have seen it other than the people who go to that particular store. So it made a really nice thing to kind of circulate and get tweeted around. And so what's making me happy this week is Ron Swanson selling bacon at Trader Joe's. I am a girl of simple pleasures. So that's what's making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. And you can follow all of us on Twitter as always. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon. That's W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen and tell him how much you appreciate him. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff. That's Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you're tapping your foot to right now. And we're very, very glad to have Mike back this week as he recovers from his wing injury. But we have him back behind the board where he belongs, and that makes all of us happy. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for being here, and we will see you back here next week.